Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers. And we have a very special guest in the studio today. It is bring your daughter to work day.
I missed that memo.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to, because in the second segment, we're going to be talking about millennials, and I wanted to have Kelvy join us. As some of you who maybe read the blog know that she's written a few articles for us, and she's part of the state director for Millennials for Cruise, and has been involved. She went to CPAC, and she's, you know, so I thought it'd be fun to talk about millennials, and how, what a better way to have talk about millennials than actually having one in studio with us.
Good morning, Kelvy.
Yes. Good morning. Glad to be here.
Good yeah. to have you.
That was a safe intro, too.
Yeah, so. good. She's yeah. like, do you want me to write something up for you? Because she was so nervous about how I was going to introduce her, you know, because there was things like it is all these embarrassing moments from.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Look, it's bad enough that she's your daughter, okay? That right there. Shane Vanderhart's daughter, that's enough.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, I did mention she clerks at the Iowa House, so I know that's probably got to make some people nervous when she says her last name.
She probably goes in there with a sack over her head.
Yeah. She's like, just, by the way, you know, she probably, by the way, Kelvy, that was all off the record, so don't tell your dad. So,
good to have you, Kelvy.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
And what do we got going on the VIP line this morning?
Yes, we have a very special guest on the VIP line, Dr. Wayne Brow. He's the chief economist and vice president for research at FreedomWorks. Dr. Brow, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
So, basically, there was a bill that was the draft was released. It's the official title is the Compliance with Court Orders Act. But it's also being called the Burr-Feinstein encryption bill because it's co-sponsored by Richard Burr, Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina, and Senator Dianne Feinstein of California.
Some of our favorite people.
Yeah, well, you know, Senator Burr's, I don't really have a strong opinion about him, but yeah. Senator Feinstein is just, she's just special. So, what... FreedomWorks came out in opposition to this bill. What is the problem with this bill?
The problem with this bill is it sort of ignores the Constitution. I mean, we have Fourth Amendment.
And what's wrong with that? No, I'm kidding.
That's just another day.
It is. I mean, it is kind of frightening. I mean, and it opens up the everyday American to a level of government snooping and sort of infringements on your privacy that they're just overwhelming. So, you know, it is opening the door to just a much, much bigger role of government in our everyday lives.
Mm. Yeah, and this is in kind of response to Apple not falling through on the court order to provide a back door to their iPhone that belonged to one of the San Bernardino shooters, correct?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, and this is, you know, and it is this, you know, this sort of security versus freedom trade-off. And, mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, that's a tough question. But we, you know, at FreedomWorks, we believe in the Constitution, and we believe that, you know, there's ways the government can, through a warrant and do things the way they do in the real world. I mean, just because we're talking about a digital world, the Constitution doesn't stop at technology's doorstep. We should have the same rights digitally and with our communications online or through smartphones as mm-hmm. we do in our everyday lives.
Right. Now, didn't they have some legal cover though with the court order with Apple?
They did, and you know, and one of the things that, you know, they've dusted off this ancient law, the All Writs Act, which, because it actually requires, you know, in that case, it required Apple to actually provide the labor to do something that the government wanted done. So, you know, in a sense, it's almost either, you know, sort of drafting the private sector to do the government's work, which again is not a position that we see as important. But this you know, there's all kinds of problems with this idea of you know, putting in a back door, because if the government can get in through that back door, hackers can get in, other governments can get in, you're just opening up a whole new realm of vulnerabilities that at the end of the day just makes it much more problematic for the everyday citizen.
So, you know, you talked about the kind of the struggle we have between security and privacy. What's the line we need to walk? I mean, what would you suggest?
I would suggest we do it the same way we do in the real world. Is, you know, the courts, you know, through subpoenas and warrants, you can get the information you need, but forcing private companies to do your bidding as a government, I think, steps over that line.
Right. So, what could the FBI have done differently in this particular case?
Well, that, I mean, that's the thing. You know, at the end of the day, they solved this case through someone who volunteered. You know, a private contractor they work with. And but I think that the problem is, you know, that was the test case that the FBI was pushing, because, you know, once they, and I don't know if you followed the stories after they announced that they opened the phone, there was a flood of cases from around the country of all these law enforcement officials requesting the FBI's help to open up phones that they've been trying to work on. You know, so that is something, you know, the FBI did, and they had the capabilities of doing that, but when you come to the point of saying, okay, we're going to make a private company do that
for you,
and we're going to force every manufacturer to give us a key to whatever products they're making, that's sort of getting us into that 1984 world where it gets a little bit, you know, privacy definitely takes
Dr. Brown, I have to confess that at the time this all happened, I was frankly shocked that our federal government intelligence agencies did not apparently have the capability to do this on their own. Did that surprise you?
Not really. I mean, it is the government after all.
Well, that's a good point. And you know, we're sitting here laughing, but on the other hand, they're supposed to be state of the art in this sort of arena.
This area, it's always a cat and mouse game. You know, they probably are very competent in doing this kind of thing, but, you know, the terrorists and criminals and the people that the FBI tracks are in this constant game with these guys, and it's, you know, I think eventually the FBI would have had the technology to do it themselves, and eventually they did come up with it. But it's an ongoing thing that there's no, you know, certainty, or there's no final end game where the FBI says, okay, we have control over everything, because once they do that, and that's one of the problems with this whole idea, well, we'll just put encryption in place and everybody's going to be safer. You know, criminals and these guys will find other ways to get their business done. So it doesn't necessarily, you know, provide that extra step of security at the end of the day.
Okay. So, basically, any other aspects with this bill? Are there ways they could clean this bill up that would make it palatable?
I don't think so. I mean, because this is basically taking the government into a new realm of control of our privacy, and you know, that's the core of this bill. And to sort of demand back doors into all kinds of technologies and equipment that we use in our lives is just, I don't think, you know, that's the heart of the bill, and I don't think you can do anything in the bill that would improve that. Because, you know, privacy is very important, and it's a fundamental right, and it sort of feeds into all the other rights we have as individuals. And what one of the strange things about the U.S. is the Constitution really doesn't address privacy. This is funny. In Europe, there's very specific restrictions on what companies or governments can do with respect to privacy, and they very clearly define privacy. In the U.S., the Constitution doesn't really address it, and so we rely on a lot of court decisions, and there's sort of this assumed sphere of privacy, but it's not been defined clearly the way other countries have, and that's why we sort of end up in these situations where you get these bills like the Burr-Feinstein bill, where it's a huge assault on privacy, and we can't turn to the Constitution directly and say, okay, here's why you can't do this. You can look at all these Supreme Court decisions, and the Fourth Amendment obviously plays a role here. But to have it, written out the way the European, most European countries and the EU as a whole have done with respect to privacy, that's why the U.S. Runs into some of these questionable bills and acts by the FBI.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Dr. Wayne Brow, the Chief Economist and Vice President for Research at FreedomWorks. Dr. Brow, the Fourth Amendment, at least, hasn't really... Well, when Rand Paul was still running for office, that was an issue that he was bringing up into the presidential race. Why do you think it's not really an issue now that he's out? Why do you think no other candidate is talking about it?
Well, it's a shame because it is a very important part of the Constitution, and I think the candidates may have not talked about it, but actually Congress just passed another bill on email privacy that it actually went out of committee, so we're probably going to get a vote on it next week, and it's the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, and that passed 28-0 out of the committee, both Republicans and Democrats, and this is basically a bill that says you need a warrant to look at emails that are over 180 days old, because currently the law says you don't. So the Fourth Amendment, maybe that you don't hear much in the presidential campaigns, but there is some good news coming out on it. And like I said, this ECPA bill is a very good thing, because the bill was written back in the 1980s when storing things on disks was very expensive.
They assumed
that nobody's going to keep an email on their disk for more than 180 days. So if it's there, then it's fair game for anybody to look at. But this is before the cloud was invented and all these kinds of technologies. So
yeah,
needed an upgrade.
I'm thinking about my own inbox, and I've got some really old emails.
Yeah, mine's an archive that goes back 10 years. But
wow. Mine's not quite that bad, but anything that was that's newer than 108 days prior to this bill did require a warrant.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. After 180 days, it was open for anybody. So this law that they're hopefully going to vote on in the House next week is something that sort of upgrades that and says, okay, it doesn't matter if it's more than 180 days old, if someone comes into your office and wants to look in your file cabinet, you hope they have a warrant. Otherwise, you're going to say no.
Right.
But now we're going to get those protections, hopefully, for if Congress does the right thing. There's some in the Senate that may slow things down.
Well, that's really good news, because Shane is right. Since Rand Paul got out of the race, it's just a non-issue in the discussions that they're having in this race now.
Yeah, I know, and it's such an important issue. It would be great to hear the candidates talk on this, and maybe if Congress does pass this bill, maybe that'll spark some conversations in the campaigns. But yeah, I think you're right. It's sorely missing since Rand Paul left the race.
Now, Dr. Brow, you're going to have to now. I'm going to have to go and delete some old emails, because I'm afraid. Just in case this doesn't get passed.
You're already on the DOG's
probably,
list, pal.
Probably NSA.
And the NSA is too.
NSA, yeah. Speaking of NSA, I've heard back and forth. I know this is an older topic, but with the Patriot Act, did they tighten that up enough to your satisfaction?
You know, it's better than it was, but you know, it fell short of where we wanted things to go. It still gives them a little bit too much discretion from our perspective in some of the surveillance that they do. And there's going to be, you know, a chance for debate they'll come back to other sections of it, but we're going to weigh back in again and see if we can tighten things up. But they did leave a little bit of discretion for the NSA and that some of the law enforcement agencies that we weren't happy with.
Good deal. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I mean, that was brought up too, and I know it was used as a criticism of Cruz and Paul for supporting the restrictions. It's like it's just metadata. Can you address why metadata is important? And just like we only have a minute and a half left.
Well, very briefly, again, one of the things is it sort of overlaps with geolocation, and they can be, you know, with using that metadata, you could probably figure out where someone was all day long. It's just metadata, but when you stream it through the right filters, it actually paints a picture that most of us wouldn't want the government to have.
Definitely. So where can we learn more about FreedomWorks?
We've got a great website, www.freedomworks.org, and we have a lot of information on these surveillance encryption issues, as well as taxes, budget, regulation, all those fun topics.
Yeah, fun.
Fun topics.
I mean, fun but important. They're not sexy topics, but they are vitally important.
And extremely important.
I encourage you to check out freedomworks.org. Dr. Brow, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Dr. Brow.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance you need. So, Kelvy, just a reminder, Kelvy is the state director for Millennials for Cruz. She was actually a Cruz supporter before I was. she worked on me, it wouldn't have worked.
It wore
me down.
Yep.
Especially after Jindal got, you know, got out, and then it's like, okay, I surrender.
Yep.
So
he lost that war.
Yeah. One of many, probably. I lose at home. So
well, you're outnumbered.
I am outnumbered.
Probably like, outgunned now, too. Now, but you're now, definitely outnumbered.
Now that Morgan left the house, it's like it's me and all girls. Even the dogs are girls, Brian.
Yeah.
And my goodness.
It's awesome.
What a deal.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But remember, go down with with a fight. You know,
I try.
Go down swinging.
I try. It's at least something short of a whimper, anyway.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
I can hear it. Vanderhart's going, I give, uncle. Yeah.
We haven't seen him cry recently, so it's been good.
So, Kelvy, what is wrong with your generation?
Everything. Where do I start? Well, okay, so, you're seeing this just weird divide, and I don't completely understand it yet. Maybe I will at some point. But you're seeing this divide between, like, these millennials clinging to their safe space and Bernie Sanders and the ones who were all gung-ho for Rand Paul and Cruz and everything that isn't politically correct. I mean, I think that's why Trump is just making this huge wave, because people are just sick of political correctness. But with millennials, I think so many of them forget that the United States is not a utopian society. I know a lot of just people I'm friends with, especially who are Bernie supporters. One of their big things was free healthcare for everyone. I'm like, yes, that would be lovely, wouldn't it, if we could give free healthcare to everyone and not have things come crashing and burning down.
But who pays the bills?
Exactly. And it's just, I mean, you've grown up in this participation trophy, you know, entitled society. And so they're not really willing.
You didn't grow up that way, though.
Oh, no, I didn't. I got first place trophies. No. No, but.
Zing. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but you're seeing just these people who are just entitled. And I really do think it's influencing their politics, as sad as that is. But it's amazing to me that Bernie Sanders is just taking off, because I think most of these millennials are supporting him slept through both economics and history, because obviously they don't see how socialism works out for countries.
But you mentioned that there is apparently some sort of neo-libertarianism amongst millennials.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, and I'm one of them, so I kind of understand this a little bit, but you're just seeing these people who are kind of watching their peers go off the Bernie Sanders dock and, you know, jump in.
Off the edge of the earth.
Yeah, fall off the cliff. And you're seeing people get sick of it. You know, we've lived through the Obama administration. We've lived through to see the national debt just skyrocket, to realize, oh, my word, we're going to be the ones who have to pay this off. We're going to be the ones who have to take care of this. We're sick of just seeing politicians, you know, say something and do nothing. We're sick of seeing just career politicians, and I think that really has driven a lot of millennials to just go from the liberal left far over to the conservative side, and just really want to embrace the, we're going to get change done, we're going to have people who actually follow through on what they say. Like my dad said, I'm the state director for the Millennials for Cruz Coalition. And just one of the reasons we've seen that skyrocket is because he has a proven record. He's someone who has followed through time after time after time. And that's actually one of the things that drew me personally as a millennial. I could go to his website before I ever supported him and see, okay, he has a record of this is what he says on this issue and this is what he has done on this issue. And even though, you know, most people just see millennials as supporting Bernie Sanders and supporting socialism and stuff, you're getting this really large movement that wants to see people get things done, wants to see government be limited. I'm involved with a group called Turning Point USA, and they're a group that just strives to educate and train and organize people. They're on hundreds of campuses, college and high school across the United States, and their big goal, their big mantra is big government sucks, which is taking off among, you know, millennials, among high schoolers, and therefore fiscal responsibility, free markets, and limited government. And so you're seeing movements like that just surge, because even though you do have this big, huge group of millennials that are chasing Bernie and, you know, everything he spouts, you do have this group that realizes, okay, this isn't working, the system is broken, and we need to change.
So do you have a rough percentage of how many millennials are going left as opposed to right?
I'd say it's starting to split down the middle.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, looking at some polling, head-to-head polling right now. Latest poll I saw that polled millennials, Cruz actually leads Hillary Clinton, which kind of surprised me. But then maybe that, you know, of course, most millennials probably like Bernie Sanders as opposed to Hillary Clinton. So.
That's true.
Here's another question for you, though, along these lines. Can millennials be politically converted? In other words, could you walk up to the garden variety Bernie Sanders supporter and share facts and history to such a person and convert them?
Absolutely. It's funny, when I was out at CPAC, I stopped into this coffee shop, and I don't know why this guy came up to me, but it was a guy about my age that was, you know, in the area. And so he just came up and started talking to me and asked me why I was out there. And I explained that I was at this conservative conference. He says, oh, well, I'm a socialist. And so I just asked him a bunch of questions and started with why. Just asked him question after question. And every once in a while, he'd pipe up and say, oh, my word, you're right. And at the end of that, he's like, I think you're completely right. You know? And I'm like, wow. Did I just convert someone from socialism to conservatism in 5 minutes, 10 minutes? But I think a lot of this is people are just being spoon-fed. And so when they start to get, encounter real hard, cold facts and truth, they really start to rethink things. I think there are some that are still bullheaded and stubborn and will charge along anyway. And
I got the biggest kick out of this, and apparently it was a common experience for some of these kids. But when Obamacare came into place and they went down and signed up and found out they had to actually pay something for it, I was like, dude, I thought this was free. It was just so hilarious. Yeah. It was like a little wake-up call to some of them.
Yeah, there was stuff I couldn't get on board with Rand Paul, but one of my favorite quotes was, charity is giving your own money, not someone else's. And that's a big thing, too. So many millennials are so concerned about social justice. They're concerned about just poverty and all these different things. But what they don't realize is that the best way to get these things accomplished is to have the government stand back, limit itself so that other people
can.
Exactly. And when the government increases, these things can't happen. But people have stopped seeing the government as something that just helps us run our country, helps us govern ourselves. They see it as this enforcing, all powerful entity that has to handle everything. Mm-hmm. That they're taking away credit for themselves too. It's like they think that the government has to solve their problems versus the citizen.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on here in the studio, not on the line. Here in the studio, we got my daughter, Kelvy Vanderhart, with Millennials for Cruise. Kelvy, one of the things that I think that the Republican Party in particular has been really bad at is reaching out to younger voters.
Absolutely.
And you look at most of the campaigns while they were still running. Did not have necessarily a targeted millennial outreach, except for, on the Republican side, Cruz and Rand Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of people underestimate millennials, and we've become an age group that we've brought a lot of this on ourselves through how we've acted. But I was reading this article called Millennials Shouldn't Vote by the Columbia Spectator, and I didn't agree with the conclusion, which was millennials should sit back and not vote and let the older and wiser generation vote, because the older and wiser generation got us where we are.
Right now I'm seeing a lot of older, wiser people going for Donald Trump, so I'm not so sure the wise part anymore.
Listen, the only old, wise guy you know is me, pal. Well, and you're a wise guy.
And I don't support the Donald.
Yeah, no, but a quote that really stood out and just really, I think, summarize what a lot of people feel about millennials and how I kind of feel about millennials, even being one, is, it says, we are passion and apathy rolled into one organic cronut of contradiction.
And so, that's your brother.
Yeah. It's a good thing he doesn't listen.
Morgan made the show again.
Yeah.
How many weeks running? Yeah, no, but I think Cruz and Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders especially, I'm not seeing Hillary really reach out to millennials. I mean, I know a few millennials that are voting for Hillary, but I'm not seeing her target them specifically. But I think a lot of people saw and realized, okay, this is a huge age group. This is an age group that has, a lot of big ideas. They have a lot of passion for this. They have a lot of just things they want to see accomplished and done, and we need to reach out and target them. And I think a lot of Republican candidates wrote off millennials because they still view them as a very liberal, left-leaning, this is a waste of our time kind of age group. Those who will vote Republican will vote Republican, and we don't really need to reach out to them.
Yeah, a couple concerns. One of the primary concerns, not only with the socialism, is also the typical millennial view on marriage.
Yes.
And even religious liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this thought, well, we don't want to discriminate, even though it's like, well, what about the person, the religious person's conscience? Does that not matter?
And this anymore? Discussion seems to all take place just completely removed from the Constitution.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of this emotive view of the world that's disconnected from our historical laws and the Constitution, obviously.
So, and I think even among, since you got millennials do tend to be more libertarian than even necessarily, mm-hmm. so you know, your typical boilerplate conservative, even some in the Republican side are, you know, leaning toward that way. But there is some good news. I don't want to totally just bash on millennials here. You know, you believe in traditional marriage.
Absolutely.
All right. So at least there's one.
I liked having a mom and a dad. I don't know. Yeah. That was a pretty good way to grow up.
Yeah. Are you sure about the dad in this case?
Well, yeah. She turned
out. I liked having a dad. Yeah.
She turned out okay. I didn't mess her up too
They'll
badly.
They'll pay for my counseling later. It's
right.
Okay.
Right. But on life, though, millennials are becoming, you know, they lean pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do you think that is?
Science. I think that's the simplest way. Even those who do not hold the necessarily life in the womb should be protected. You know, we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Science is becoming really hard to ignore. And I mean, those who ignore it are being seen as ignorant. When you can do 4D ultrasounds, that, I mean, you have a pretty clear picture that that's a baby, and that's, you know, when we're willing to protect unborn eagles or unborn dolphins, I think a lot of people are getting fed up with, okay, what about unborn humans?
So they see the contradiction there.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, even Hillary Clinton said a couple of weeks ago, you know, unborn persons don't have constitutional rights. So thank you, Mrs. Clinton, for
embracing personhood.
Exactly. And showing, you know, exactly how you view constitutional rights. But
I think she even called it a baby later on. And she was criticized for that.
Yep. She was criticized. It was interesting by both people who are pro-life and people mm-hmm. who support abortion, because the pro-lifers are like, okay, well, you just took away their constitutional rights. They're a person, and you just ripped those away from them. And the people who support abortion are like, oh, no, she regarded them as a person. This is a problem.
Right.
And the use of the word baby was also anathema to them.
Mm-hmm. So we just have like a minute left. Quickly, how can conservatives better reach millennials?
I think you need to get rid of any mushy advertising, anything that is politically correct and has just been, phrased to death. The things that are really reaching millennials, I mean, if you look at Trump, his Make America Great. If you look at Turning Point USA, big government sucks. Those strong, non-politically correct things. Conservative millennials don't want to hear garbage, and so you can't reach them with that.
Great. Thank you so much, Kelvie. And she's going to stick with us for the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Thank you.
That was a good discussion. Very interesting. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
Okay, it's time for our news segment, otherwise known as News You Can Use. First up, we've got one from Newsweek. Sandy Hook lawsuit. Judge rules against gun manufacturers. In a major blow to gun companies, a judge in Connecticut on Thursday denied a motion to dismiss a lawsuit brought by 10 families affected by the December 2012 massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School. The lawsuit was brought against the maker of the Bushmaster AR-15 rifle used in the shooting. The three gun companies named in the case had argued for the lawsuit to be dismissed under the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act. It's a 2005 federal law that provides gun businesses general immunity from civil lawsuits. Connecticut State Judge Barbara Bellis rejected the gun company's motion. The families are suing the maker, distributor, and seller of the rifle, which the gunman used to kill 21st graders and 6 educators in Newtown, Connecticut, in less than 5 minutes. They argue the rifle shouldn't have been entrusted to the general public because it is a military-style assault weapon that is unsuited for civilian use. They say the gun companies knew, or should have known, about the high risks posed by the weapon, including the ability for a shooter to use it to inflict maximum casualties and serious injury.
Okay, one thing, there is no such thing as an assault weapon.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's a style.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
It's secondly, not a type.
That man could have come in with 2 handguns and mm-hmm. accomplished the same thing. 3, if companies are liable for what people do with their mm-hmm. with their product, then I'm going to sue McDonald's for making me fat.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, there you go.
Yeah, so if I get heart disease down the road, it's like McDonald's.
It's all their fault.
Yeah, or whoever. I don't actually go to McDonald's all that often, but, you know, whatever. any fast food. You could carry on to all sorts of different. I mean, just if people just sit down and think for a second, mm-hmm. what could happen if this lawsuit goes through? It's just.
Well, there's a sense in which this is such an absurd moment in which, mm. I mean, look at this. The gun companies knew or should have known about the high risks posed by the weapon. Well, duh. It's a gun.
Right.
There's right. an inherent risk to it.
Right. That particular weapon.
Cue up the Twilight Zone music.
The weapon, yeah, there's no doubt. These weapons are designed to kill people. At least that particular weapon. It wasn't a hunting rifle, but it's meant for self-defense, home defense.
It seems to me like the only legitimate argument, and I'm not saying I'm sympathetic to it, mm-hmm. but I'm just thinking legally, it seems to me the only legitimate argument has to do with high capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Not the gun itself,
right?
But how many rounds.
With the magazine?
But
here's the thing. Tape 2 magazines together. People, there's all sorts of ways around that.
I'm with you, Shane. I'm saying
anybody who's trained can get around that.
Okay, next up, this is a little brighter subject. Tim Tebow is being eyed for the open Florida House seat, and some consider him to be a shoe-in. This is from the Washington Examiner. The surprise retirement of a key Florida congressman has Republican strategists eager to give the ball to former Florida Gators quarterback Tim Tebow. We do not pick favorites, said a key party strategist, but obviously a huge Florida football star would be an interesting candidate for our side of the aisle.
Mm.
Anyway, apparently Tebow has recently expressed an interest in an eventual political run, and the former Heisman Trophy winner was asked by Fox about politics and said, if there's a chance you can make a difference someday in something, then it would be intriguing. Tebow was not immediately available for comment.
I think that'd be interesting.
Well, I do too.
I would support him running. Everything I know about him,
yeah.
He's a pretty conservative guy and a follower of Christ. And
I think on social issues, he'd be right there with us. Right. Now, where exactly he's at relative to the role of government.
Those are some things we need to know.
Yeah. But
still.
If you want to get millennials out to vote, put a Florida Gators quarterback up and you'll get people from both sides of the aisle.
All right. Next up, Donald Trump's favorite Bible teaching.
Yeah, I'll cue, before we play the clip, this will be fascinating. A little context here. He was interviewing with Bob Lonsberry of WHAM, 1180 AM in Rochester, New York. And he was asked, is there a favorite Bible verse or Bible story that has informed your thinking or your character through life, sir? And here's what Donald said.
But let me just throw this out there. Is there a favorite Bible verse or Bible story that has informed your thinking or your character through life, sir?
Well, I think many. I mean, you know, when we get into the Bible, I think many, so many. And tell people about an eye for an eye. You can almost say that. That's not a particularly nice thing. But, you know, if you look at what's happening to our country, I mean, when you see what's going on with our country, how people are taking advantage of us and how they scoff at us and laugh at us and they laugh at our face. And they're taking our jobs. They're taking our money. They're taking our you know, they're taking the health of our country. And we have to be very firm and we have to be very strong. And we can learn a lot from the Bible, that I can tell you.
We can learn a lot.
Be sure to read 2 Corinthians.
Like kindness and mercy and yeah.
Can I point out though that Alistair Begg uses that expression? He'll say 2 Corinthians.
I mean, that's true.
Okay, we'll cut the Donald some slack here. You know,
don't cut him much.
First of all, the guy is just this is just off the top of his head. He was not prepared for that question.
Not at all.
Cut him a little more slack.
But nobody reads the Bible as much as he does.
That's right.
That's right.
And but him saying eye for an eye, that totally makes sense.
So much
with how he acts and how his campaign has been run. Not surprised.
And speaking of Donald Trump, the Colorado GOP chair is receiving death threats from the Donald's supporters. This is from Denver Channel 7, ABC News. Emails obtained by ABC News sent to Colorado GOP Chairman Steve House tell him to quit whining about all the threatening calls and emails he's receiving. Another email tells him to pray he makes it to Cleveland and instructs him to support Trump or you are done.
What does that mean?
Yeah, use your imagination. One email provided to ABC News tells House to hide his family members. This does not have to do with Trump. This has to do with the people having a chance to vote, one email sent today read. Admit that the residents of Colorado shout to have the chance to vote rather than a slim minority telling the residents of Colorado who they have to vote for.
Yeah, grammar's obviously not a high, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a high priority.
Priority, yes.
It keeps going here. That is the real story here. Quit whining about all the calls and emails you're getting. It's your job. If you don't want it, resign.
Dear goodness.
Yeah, well, but there are also several delegates in Indiana have also been threatened. And they haven't even had a chance to even, you know, vote yet. So it's pretty fascinating.
It's what you might call ugly out there.
Right.
Mob mentality.
And here's the thing, folks. Donald Trump in Colorado, if he actually had an understanding of the rules and the process, he could have competed for those delegates just like mm-hmm. Ted Cruz did.
Yeah.
But since he wasn't paying attention or didn't understand, he missed out on the caucuses. He missed out on the county conventions. And if he didn't show up at the caucuses, the county conventions, mm-hmm. it's over.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Because
that's been his weakness all along,
right.
Is he's wanted to have these big rallies and so on and so forth, as opposed to a very strong, well-organized ground game.
Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway, Republicans in Colorado did have a voice, and they said, Cruz. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
That person brings out the worst in me. I never act like this with anyone else. Sound familiar? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Many want to know how some people know how to push their buttons. But the more helpful questions to answer are, who gave them access to their buttons? And what makes those buttons work? Too often we fail to look at ourselves when someone provokes a response from us that we do not like. We are fixated on blaming them for being good at bringing out the bad in us. But where does that bad come from? The Bible says that it is our sinful desires that keep conflict going. Could it be that the button pusher might actually help you see what is really on the inside? If someone's pushing your buttons, why don't you take the time to stop by our counseling center here in Ames or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. That's crosswalkcounseling.org.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, hitting the home stretch here. Do you realize we blog too? Be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com where you can read our daily updates. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Be our friends. We would appreciate it.
Please.
We all need some.
Brian's lonely.
We don't have any friends.
We don't have any friends.
So please.
And now, we've come to my favorite part of the show. We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
This one came from our own Ron Carlson.
Yay!
Oh, dear.
Yeah, let's have a little applause here.
Yes.
That's right. Very little.
We always need more Ron.
I think there's a couple of them on the other side of the...
Oh, now. Be careful.
Okay, this is from thetruthaboutcars.com. Two suspects in a nonviolent Los Angeles burglary decided yesterday that if you're being watched on TVs everywhere, you should at least entertain your audience. The two men, who were pursued by police and watched from the air, drove their rental Ford Mustang convertible through rainy afternoon traffic and past excited crowds in what the L.A. Times has called the most L.A. chase ever.
Gosh.
During the chase, which ended in the suspect's arrest,
you think?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After they stopped to take selfies with passerby.
It's true.
Oh, the suspects performed donuts on a rain-slicked Hollywood Boulevard. Now, in case you don't know what that is when you sit there and do an endless series of circles with your vehicle, and you have got the accelerator jammed to the floor, and the rear wheels are spinning like mad, and the tires are smoking like crazy. And this is what they did.
Yep.
During the pursuit, the Mustang suffered at least one low-speed impact, a flat tire, and was briefly boxed in by a TMZ tour bus.
Nice.
Although they got their man in the end, who now faces several driving-related charges.
You think?
Yeah, seriously? The LAPD didn't come out of this chase without egg on their face. Not only did the suspects have to stop and wait patiently for cops to arrive while being filmed the entire time, one officer's spike strip fumble had Twitter abuzz.
Oh,
now, I didn't see this. Ron, did you see it on the video?
Yeah. He's like two lanes away from him and tries to deploy this strip to puncture their tires, and it gets maybe half a lane toward them, and that's it. And they're sitting there at a stop sign. He had plenty of time. He could have walked over and sit in front of the car. It was that bad.
Wow.
It was terrible.
Thankfully, no one was injured in the chase, unlike so many we've seen in the past. It's hard not to notice there's something uniquely American about a chase like this.
God bless America.
Following a relatively minor crime that wouldn't even make the papers, the news media, general populace, and a suspect's devil-may-care showmanship all combined to entertain an entire city on a dreary, rainy day.
Dear goodness.
And it is now immortalized on film.
It'll be on the net forever.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
I got to see this, though, Ron.
Yeah, it's real interesting. When they're doing the donuts, there's cars, you know, they'll stop and wait to get around them because these guys are just right in the middle of a four-lane street, you know.
So this is like the next best thing to the OJ chase.
Yeah,
right?
It's incredible. You're going like, these guys are being chased, right?
they're going so slow. It's so leisurely. You just can't believe it. It's crazy.
Well, it's an L.A. chase.
Yeah, that's
don't
right.
Get in a hurry.
That's right. Yeah.
We got to drive through Starbucks or something.
I'm surprised they didn't do something like that. Definitely.
The selfies is what that gets me. It's like that guy who took a selfie with a terrorist a couple of months ago.
Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
This is Shane Venner with Brian Myers and Kelvy Vanderhart. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening.
Take care, everybody.
Have a good week.